It is a rare occasion that we celebrate the 500th anniversary of anything, no less something which began as what normally be a momentary, passing, long-forgotten event, a challenge to a debate. In fact, what is more unworthy of any recognition than a challenge to a scholarly debate that would never occur as intended? Yet the announcement of the challenge to debate in and of itself would trigger one of the greatest changes in history. The simple act of posting the 95 Theses by a questioning young priest ignited the spark in a time which was ripe for dramatic change. It came at the right time, and it came in the right place, led perhaps by the right person, a determinedly committed young priest. Europe was just emerging out of the Middle Ages, during which the Church of Rome dominated life and was the authority behind the Holy Roman Empire. Scientific thought was suppressed, and the common man was kept away from educated thinking and thought processes beyond their normal activities of keeping alive. Education was limited to the ecclesiastical order and the most elite in society. Religion, which controlled all of life, was determined by the whim and the interpretation of Rome. The Bible was not available to anybody outside of Rome's control. Even if it were available to the common man, he would not be able to read it because he was essentially illiterate, and especially to the religious languages. Anyone who challenged the authority of Rome would quickly be done away with. John Huss would suffer that in his faith when he was burned at the stake. But there were attempts to reform the church as early as the 12th century with Peter Waldo and his subsequent followers of the Waldensians, John Huss and his followers, the Moravians, in the late 14th and early 15th century. Then it was John Wycliffe in the early 15th century of Great Britain, in which he and his followers translated the Bible into the common language of the people. But without the printing press, it remained only in the hands of a few who had handwritten copies. The questioning of Rome's religious acts did exist, but as a more or less underground movement by the Waldensians, the Moravians, and the followers of Wycliffe. The seeds had been planted during the Middle Ages, but it wouldn't be until Gutenberg's invention of the printing press and its widespread usage throughout Europe that a means of mass communication was available to promote the cause for change. Martin Luther was the beneficiary not only of the prior reform movements and the printing press, but the growing political unrest of the secular authorities who were tired of being fleeced by Rome. In light of this, Luther's call for debate with his 95 Theses struck not only the desire for religious reform, but also political, social, and economic reform. By questioning the validity of indulgences, he struck a gnawing issue within both the secular and religious worlds. He was at the right time in the right place. The right time because the evolving Renaissance era brought with it the beginning of the scientific thinking, and the right place was Germany, in which the Elector of Saxony, Frederick, found Luther as his bright and brilliant intellectual star. He seemed to be receptive to thinking which would free him from the dictates of the past dark ages. Therefore, Frederick wanted to establish an intellectual center in Wittenberg, and he saw the young Martin Luther as the person to help make this happen. The simple posting of the 95 Theses and the resulting publication of them introduced the world to a whole new revelation of Christianity. It would have the effect of exposing the secularization of the church and Rome's corrupt formula for Christianity. By doing this, Luther was able to again center Christianity upon the scriptures, which emphasize faith and not works as the core of living. His revelation came in reading Paul's letter to the Romans. Quote, "For we hold that a person is justified by faith apart from works prescribed by the law." End of quote. After struggling with the question of how he, a sinner, could earn his way into God's forgiving grace, these words gave him the answer to his torturous struggle of the past. At that moment of discovery, he finally found the freedom to know that no amount of works would earn him the forgiveness he so desperately has sought. No, God's forgiving grace was initiated by God through Jesus and was freely given. Mankind could not initiate God's grace and could not bribe God in order to receive this forgiving grace. These further words of Paul gave Luther the answer he had so desperately tried to earn. Since all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, they are now justified by his grace as a gift through the redemption that is in Christ Jesus, whom God put forward as a sacrifice of atonement by his blood, effective through faith. After all the struggles of browbeating himself, doing all kinds of works and being unsuccessful in finding that freedom of being through knowing God's forgiveness, Luther would dramatically change with these words of Paul. A forgiving and loving relationship with God was freely given. But how or what is required to receive this gift? Luther's tumultuous search would be complete, not only with the knowledge that God's grace was freely given, but with Paul's words that it was effective through faith. As the theologian Søren Kierkegaard wrote, "We must make that leap of faith into a world beyond one's own physical avenues of thought. This leap causes life to go beyond the speculative into the life of accepting, into the life of believing, into the life of living, that which goes beyond all human logical patterns of thought. Luther thus saw faith as key to the reality of God's grace. His love and forgiveness. It is through faith that we live a life free from the dictates of secularization of Christianity. Free from the impossibility of the law, for the law only enslaves and condemns. So it was with these words of Paul, the practice of indulgences, of buying your way into God's heavenly kingdom, was totally undermined. The church had replaced the authority of the scriptures with the authority of a secularized empire of mankind. In this secularized church, the condemnation of one's soul was central. The emphasis of the condemnation of the law gave the church the power to dictate life of mankind out of fear. Therefore, when the church wanted more wealth and power, it gave the people the opportunity to at least partially buy their way out of God's wrath, as promoted by Rome. This was by way of the sale of not only indulgences, but other acts, rituals, and relics. Thus, Luther, almost innocent document to debate the 95 Theses, were a very real threat to Rome, to the Holy Roman Empire, and to the ongoing course of history. The threat was, in fact, that the real message of Christ was that of freedom from the wrath of God and free to have a personal relationship with a loving God. As John wrote, "So if the Son makes you free, you will be free indeed." This newfound sense of freedom would not only apply to a grace-centered Christianity known through personal faith, but also to a new sense of secular freedom from a society dominated by the few elite. The have-nots found their justification to rebel through this new and found sense of freedom, which was ultimately triggered by the posting and the publication of the 95 Theses. The world would never be the same again. Out of the Reformation came the Age of Enlightenment, which would propel man's journey into scientific discoveries, new forms of political systems, and the freedom of expression and thinking, as well as the spread of a reformed tradition of Christianity known as Protestantism. But the Reformation did not and should not have ended with Luther, the 95 Theses, and the events that followed. The church and society need always to experience a Reformation throughout its ongoing history. Secularization and corruption always creeps into the church and seeks to devalue or even forget or subvert the scriptures and corrupt justice in society. Today is no exception. Within a deeply corrupt and divisive society, and even within Christianity, we need to find that reformation back to the values based upon God's gift of grace, His love and his forgiveness. To celebrate the 500th anniversary of the Reformation is to also commit to a continuing Reformation then in today's world. You know, we have been set free to do so. Now, as is tradition at Epiphany on Reformation Sunday, today we also set our goals for the coming year. Hopefully, we will strive to reach these goals, and especially the goal of living that faith which fills our lives with God's grace. And if the goals could be handed out at this time. Be it hereby proclaimed, the 2018 goals set forth for Epiphany Lutheran Church: to effectively communicate our beliefs, principles, and programs through social media and other means. To explore ways to be more meaningful to young people and young families. To continue developing and enhancing our Sunday school program. To continue the utilization of other formats, worship formats and experiences. To continue to enhance the fellowship among members and visitors. To develop a plan to increase our mission of growth. To pursue avenues of Bible study during Lent. To enhance the music program. May God grant us the wisdom, guidance, and strength to fulfill these goals in the coming year. And I ask Richmond to post these goals on the door.